Welcome, everybody, to episode 319 of WordPress Weekly for Wednesday, June 6th, 2018. Almost into it's almost summertime here. Woo.
Almost,
But today it
yes,
feels like fall.
almost 40 degrees in the Midwest. It's almost
That's
summer.
right. I'm Jeff Chandler, joined by John James Jacoby here with your weekly weather update. And hey, John, how's it going?
Okay, how are you?
Good. Let's make this quick.
I
We
think
know
we
how
should
some of
make
our
this quick.
listeners, don't like our 5-minute intros.
All right, well, it was a 5-second intro. On to the next one.
Awesome. Today is going to be sort of a mixed type show. So we got Gary Pendergast, who's joining us today live from I think the great land of Down Under. Is that correct?
That is correct, where it is cold.
Well, I guess it is
It,
winter time there.
it,
I have to channel my inner
it's
Johnny Carson and ask, how cold is it?
It is quite cold. It is let me have a look at my magical device that tells me everything.
Australia
It's
doesn't get cold. Come on.
No,
you're gonna
it's not
your
really cold.
answers
Like
your
it's
answers
not
gonna
like
be in
snowing cold.
it's gonna be in Celsius, and you're gonna confuse Jeff.
Yeah.
That's right.
It's 12 degrees Celsius, and I have no idea what that is in Fahrenheit.
That's like a, that's like 107.77, I think. It scales
My
up as
brain
you
hurts
go.
already.
It's like decibels.
My brain hurts. So we got Gary on the show today, and we're going to it's going to be sort of like a mix between an interview and discussing some of the news. He's going to give us an update on what's happening with the Gutenbergs. In fact, there's a big release that happened recently with 3.0.0. But before we get into that, let's no, I don't know where to start, but I figure let's start here. Microsoft acquires GitHub for $7.5 billion in stock. This is
Oof.
excuse me, John. Is there something you'd like to say about this?
No, I'm sorry. Please continue. Please keep going.
Anyways, the other day, Microsoft Corp announced that it has reached an agreement to acquire GitHub. I guess there's like over 28 million developers across the world that use it. They use it to collaborate for $7.5 billion in Microsoft stock. That's right, B with the billion,
Oof.
subject to customary closing conditions and all that financial jazz. So this is big news. And immediately after this was announced, there were a million Clippy jokes, there were a million SourceForge jokes, and GitLab had to do some emergency scaling because a lot of people ended up transferring their projects from GitHub to GitLab. And there's a lot of discussion on Twitter. I would say a lot of reincarnated dislike, or I hate's a strong word, but maybe dislike from Microsoft in terms of their views on open source. But I saw a lot of people who've been paying attention to Microsoft chime in those conversations and say, hey, this isn't the same Microsoft as it was, five, even 10 years ago. I mean, they've made major strides in the open source community, in the open source world. And their CEO has said that they're going to do what they can to make GitHub remain as open as possible. And there's going to be even more open source stuff in the future for Microsoft. So huge announcement. Hey, Oracle didn't buy it. So everybody's got that going for them. And I'll start with you, John, and then we'll get with Gary on your thoughts to this. Come on. Come on, John. I wanted to go with you first.
This is a it's a pretty smart move for Microsoft, honestly. And like Microsoft has taken a lot of major strides at improving their reputation when it comes to not just like customer service or Windows or software or whatever else, but like being good citizens on the web. And so on one arm of it, there is like what better gesture than investing heavily in the biggest living developer organism on the web? That is like the smartest move that a company like Microsoft could probably do right now. It doesn't either. I'm still a child of the 80s and 90s, and so there is also the reputation that they have of sort of do, not doing a great job with stuff, and so. There's a part of me that's like, oh, but then there's a big part of me that's like, whoo, finally, you know? And so I'm sort of 50-50 about it. I think, Jeff, you tweeted, maybe I'm totally misattributing this, that did you tweet that this reminded you of the movable type WordPress everybody moving off of GitHub to GitLab?
No, I tweeted, that my tweet was in relation to a Wikipedia article I found about WordPress's birthday, where I just think if, you know, if you go back to that one pivotal moment of when Movable Type changed their licensing, that was a huge step for WordPress in terms of its growth. And I just wonder, you know, what if they didn't do that? Or what if they did something different?
I think Dave Weiner tweeted something. And again, I'll just continue to misattribute Benjamin Franklin 37 years ago that he had never really considered that GitHub was a thing that could be bought. Like, the thought had just never crossed his mind. And I completely agree with that. Like, it was just this amazing thing that everyone was using that, you know, came together and all felt good. And we were all, hurrah, here we go. And then out from underneath you, someone buys the entire healthcare system of a country. And you're like, holy crap. How is that even possible? I guess that's enough for me, Gary. What do you think? How do you feel? How should I feel?
How should you feel? Let me tell you. I absolutely agree with you that this is a smart move for Microsoft, and I think it's kind of it's very indicative of the new CEO. He's not really the new CEO anymore. He's been there for like 4 years now. Satya Nadella. He's he's very, very pushing. He's very, very strong on pushing Microsoft as like having no real interest in locking people into Windows. Like locking people into the Windows platform isn't their business model anymore. It's all about providing Microsoft services wherever they happen to be, and so GitHub's a great extension to that. They're kind of getting into the developer mindshare effectively, and you kind of see that a lot more in even the last 12 months, where like Visual Studio Code has become hugely popular. Like I switched to that and haven't looked back. It's a great editor. Their Azure testing platform. I can't remember the name of it, but it's suddenly people are interested in that. It's really cool. They're providing lots of stuff that you don't get on any other testing platforms. I think they're really pushing hard on building the things that. That the current generation of developers want, and GitHub is part of that. Yep. So that's cool. I think, like, as far as should you move your code off GitHub, I don't think so. I think that right now, they've said that they have no plans on making huge changes to it, and I believe them. Like they'll operate as a separate business unit. GitHub will change as like people who work at Microsoft now will kind of move over to GitHub, and people who work at GitHub will move over to Microsoft, and there'll be cross-pollination of how the two companies work. But I don't think it'll be some huge thing where suddenly you have to log in with your Microsoft ID and you have to get Clippy's permission for your pull request and all that kind of thing. It's not going to be that kind of drastic change. And if it is, like you mentioned earlier with Movable Type and WordPress, there are alternatives that can just import your project and can be up and running again in half an hour on a completely different platform.
And I think for most folks that are using GitHub, the same rule applies regardless of who owns it, I guess. I know, like, I have friends that work at like Wells Fargo or Northwestern Mutual or wherever, and they're using more open source tools, more open source platforms or third-party APIs, hosting their stuff with Amazon, where the like sort of issue of non-competing in a mutually shared environment is starting to go away a little bit. And so does that change if GitHub is owned by GitHub or GitHub is owned by Microsoft? I don't know where that point is for every company, but it's unlikely to seems like it's unlikely to affect like a ton of people. Like, does Apple suddenly pull all of their stuff down because they are some direct friendly competitor with Microsoft? it's these are interesting conversations that I'm sure that somewhere people are having. But I think the educated guess is, of course they don't. Like, what good would that possibly do to just yank everything off of it? It's dismissive. It's non. It's unfriendly, and it just it alienates out the momentum of the developers that you've already got helping you. So the reality is, I probably don't really expect for it to change anything. Probably not for a while.
No, and there's been some discussion. I've seen discussion about people being, oh, Microsoft has access to people's to like companies' private repos now, and I'm like, it doesn't really matter that much. It's automatic has a bunch of private repos on GitHub. We're not moving anything.
I did read something which Jeff, I will attribute you for sharing with me, even though you probably didn't. Is someone who had the horror story of they made some kind of JavaScript compiler or job, and someone from Microsoft approached them to like fork it or work on it, and he said, "Sure, like come on in." And then they just copied whatever the library was, like completely wholesale without attribution. And that's like one of those things where that's like one person who worked at a company who did the wrong thing, and it is a little bit unrealistic to like lambast the entire company for like the one thing that happens. But there is some element of scariness to that, I guess. But at the same time, what are you using in a private repo that you were completely comfortable with GitHub employees possibly seeing and not Microsoft employees possibly seeing? Because if that's the case, then it shouldn't have been anywhere. Nobody should be seeing it because it should be private, like private to the world, not private to like most people, but not everybody, LOL. I don't know. It seems like I agree. Like it won't change for most folks.
So two questions. One, when will Windows operating system be released as open source on GitHub? And everybody's doing pull requests on the Windows operating system. And two, when will WordPress move from Track and use GitHub?
I could totally see Windows being open source.
Me too.
Like they're not really pushing being sold anymore. Like Windows 10 was a free upgrade for like a year and a half or something after it was released. They're not worried about making money off that anymore.
Gary, do you know anybody or have you ever talked with anybody over there about what the build process looks like for a Windows binary at this point?
I haven't spoken to anyone. Like I've read stories about it. They apparently do nightly builds of Windows and roll them out internally to everyone's computers. I don't know if it's everyone or just most people, but
I would guess that most folks, even internally, had have to have moved to Git for almost everything, right? Like they might have some old random library that's still in CSV or it might be in Subversion or who knows, Mercurial, or whatever else. I'm sure there's something over there, but it would make sense to try and move decades worth of stuff to GitHub if you could. So
they've got a lot of stuff. There's like someone did analysis. There's like 1,000 Microsoft employees who work on who at least work on Microsoft's public GitHub repos.
That's awesome.
Microsoft has more people working on the stuff in their repos than GitHub has employees.
Right.
GitHub has like 700 or 800 people. It's huge.
That's crazy. That's awesome.
So if we look at WordPress, it uses Subversion and we have Track. And I know that there's an announcement, I almost want to say it was the last, perhaps maybe WordCamp US, where there is a mirrored version of WordPress that's on GitHub, but it does not accept pull requests. So will we get to a day, and Gary, you may know something about this, will we get to a day where people can, instead of submitting tickets or patches through Track, that we could just start submitting pull requests and take advantage of what GitHub has to offer for WordPress development?
Like, I think so, yeah. I think, like, particularly when I talk to people who aren't developers, to when I talk to people who are designers or who are copywriters or whoever it happens to be who aren't interested in the technical details of how a version control system works, they just want to just be able to contribute a change. Then like the GitHub apps and the GitHub pull request interface, it's really really nice.
Yeah, it is.
So, I love it too. Like, I wish more more of software development was as simple to use as GitHub.
I agree.
It was as simple to get into as GitHub makes it. So I would absolutely love to see a day where WordPress is operating through GitHub, or it could be GitLab, whatever it happens to be. I don't have a strong preference. GitLab these days is pretty good.
The one thing
that speaking of GitLab, isn't that the company Matt Mulloway actually invested in not too long ago?
It sure is, Jeff.
Okay. Well,
yeah, it sure is.
There we go.
That was also, years ago at the one of the contributor summits, when we were talking about moving to Fabricate or anything else, and I was like, why not GitLab? I get that it's not like our tech stack. We already use Track, which isn't our wheelhouse either. What's the difference between using something like Python or using something as Go? Or is most of it in Go now? Node? I don't remember what GitLab's in. I've installed it a few times. I don't remember. Eric Hitter is laughing at me right now, I guess. But GitLab would be in the spirit of owning it, but allow for the tooling with Git behind it. I think there are some shared philosophies within the GitLab team and the WordPress or the GitLab software and WordPress's software, the communities and all that. And I completely agree with Gary that GitHub as a web app they've struck a really good balance between like being fast and utilitarian, doing normal page refreshes where I expect for a full page refresh to happen, but doing really fast long polling on things that I expect to kind of poll, and having really good interface for interacting with one another. And in a time where our generation of folks are turning comments off all across the web, GitHub somehow managed to make the interaction with code and the comments with it exactly perfect, where I don't mind issues and pull requests and conversation and discussion happening on GitHub, because the UI is just kind of so good and feels like purposeful that I think GitHub, like as far as just UI and UX goes, they really, really nailed it pretty hard.
You heard it here first. JTrip is going to move WordPress to GitHub.
Oh boy, as if he didn't have enough on his plate.
It actually wouldn't be that hard. Most of it's already kind of doing what it needs to do. It would just be spiritually getting people used to the idea. But I guess the other side of it, too, is for a really long time, WordPress core committers were in the single digits and double digits and the kind of pull request reviewer workflow that GitHub provides is a – it's a ramp-up period. And so I think – very smartly, without me knowing that this was on purpose, but I think it's easy to see that opening up WordPress core committers to the team being bigger, component maintainers, more people have commit, there are more leaders helping the software grow, that it helps a community that in recent history has gone from single-digit committers to maybe having hundreds or thousands of committers. You don't go from 0 to 100 overnight. You get the community used to the idea, and then you transition into having everything live in GitLab or on GitHub or in a different kind of workflow. So I think it's kind of seems like the writing's on the wall that it'll happen. It just depends on when the feeling is right, in my opinion.
Well, speaking of feelings and changes, let's talk about Gutenberg. Because there's always feelings and changes around Gutenberg, right? Feelings of happiness, feelings of sorrowness, feelings of hysteria. Anyways, so Gutenberg recently pushed out its 30th update to the editor plugin. This is version 3.0.0, and this one does a lot of sort of visual changes to the block library or the block inserter. Notably, tabs have been removed. And it says that blocks have bigger surface areas and plugins can supply a distinct color now for the block icon background. This seeks to allow the inserter to better scale while retaining visual clarity. And the other addition to the inserter is related to the new concept of child blocks, which the post on makethatwordpress.org, the core section, explains and has a couple of images to where you can visualize it. And there's also been some updates with theme styles. Now themes can opt into sort of the default styles for blocks. And somebody who may know a thing or two about Gutenberg is Gary, who has been working kind of in the trenches with Gutenberg now for a while. So Gary, what's the highlights in this release? And the question on everybody's mind is, how close is this thing now 30 updates in to being proposal ready?
I guess you look at the changes in Gutenberg 3.0, and there are some big changes, but they're very much about polish. They're looking at kind of what we've seen, how we've seen people using Gutenberg, how it's been problems we've run into, and thinking about, okay, how can we make it so that it works for all of these other use cases. So I think that's kind of the stage that Gutenberg is at now. There's a couple of large features left to do before I'd say that it's feature complete, but really it's starting to transition into that phase of like getting a lot more people using it, figuring out, okay, what all of the possible use cases are. Like WordPress is used on millions of sites, so there's going to be a huge variety of different ways that people can use it. So getting that wider range of feedback and making sure that the Gutenberg experience works for all of them is kind of where I think Gutenberg is at now.
Yeah, with WordCamp EU 2018 right around the corner here, if I remember correctly, and this is rare that I actually remember correctly, but at the State of the Word, Matt Mullowig announces the core focus of an editor. There's going to be a new editor, and then about 5 or 6 months later at WordCamp EU, he announces sort of the first sort of public pushed version of the Gutenberg plugin. And now it's been about a year, so I guess 30 updates later, and it just seems kind of ironic with the timing that here we are 30 updates later and WordCamp EU is right around the corner. And I wonder if there's any big announcements planned, or if there's any, I know WordCamp EU has quite a few different sessions, like how to create a block in Gutenberg and the future of WordPress and things of that nature. And and speaking of Gutenberg, has there been any more discussion on the call out, the Try Gutenberg call out that has been sort of here and taken out?
I think it's something that we've wanted to do, but it's something that I wouldn't want to push out prematurely.
Right.
Like it's something that is going to get Gutenberg a lot of attention. So it's having Gutenberg, having like the block editor working well for a lot of people is kind of a priority there. So Daniel Backuber has been doing a lot of work there on combing through the issues on the GitHub repo and just getting an idea of kind of what are the things that we need to make sure are fixed before we add that the Try Gutenberg call out.
Yeah. To me, it's the call out is, you know, it's a delicate process. You know, you want to time it out so that, you know, me personally, I think when the call out, if it's ever added to a core version of WordPress, I think that'll be an indication that, okay, we believe that this Gutenberg is very, very close to being proposed and merged into core. And because of that, let's see what all these other people think. And that'll be the real test to show you how close it is to merge proposal.
And I think that's a really good way of looking at it. Like Gutenberg is like, there's not just going to magically be here's the merge proposal, it's time to start the 5.0 cycle. I think it's going to be kind of a ramp up. It's going to be, there'll be a point where, okay, good. In, I think the near future where we're looking at, Gutenberg and saying it's feature complete. It's like the APIs are all locked down. This is the thing that you should be, building your stuff against. And then along with that, there'll be the Try Gutenberg call out. There'll be more sites using it. It'll be, it's been, like we've just got it working on WordPress.com on at least our internal P2s. So the next step of that is making it available to WordPress.com users. Where rather than it just being it was never about just, well, dumping this on the entire WordPress world. It's about getting the entire WordPress world aware of it and ready for it. Mm-hmm. It's not going to be a massive change all at once. It's about getting people ready for the change.
And by the way, writing about releases, Gutenberg releases, is a bit tough because there's major things, but then these change logs are miles long.
Yeah, sorry about that. We've got
you don't have to apologize. I'm just saying.
That's you're saying, like, there've been 30 major releases over the last year and a half, and it's like it's gone from an initial proof of concept to WordCamp Europe, where it was like this working plugin, but it didn't work for a lot of people's use cases, to now we're looking at a fully featured replacement for the editor, which is, it's evolved fast, and it's evolved at a speed that the WordPress world, or at least WordPress core, hasn't seen for a long time, if ever.
When I think about the Gutenberg merge, it reminds me, it's sort of like WordPress releases are like the opposite of the way that, like, Apple releases versions of macOS. Like with macOS, they have a name for the release, and then there's like a theme that goes along with that name, and then everyone during that release cycle for Sierra, High Sierra, Mountain Lion, Mojave, there's sort of a theme that carries with people throughout that release. But with WordPress, we never know who the jazz artist is ahead of time. And so the release cycle doesn't really have a what I would consider to be like an obvious like workflow, or the obvious sort of theme, I guess. Maybe a theme is a better word. And so if you knew that the jazz artist was known for low, mellow tones and partnering with other people to do other cool things, you would know that during this release cycle of WordPress, there would be some under the hood changes, and it would be in conjunction with some buddy on the Drupal side or Django or something else. And so with Gutenberg, it makes me wish we had like the artist that was kind of out there, or like reaching ahead, or a futuristic, or I don't know if it's like acid jazz, or I don't know what I get. Like, what if we had a thing that represented the all of the emotions and feelings that merging Gutenberg into a branch means and brings, and the excitement and the energy and all of it. It would be nice to know the jazz artist ahead of time for something like that.
Welcome to WordPress 5.0, Kanye West.
That's on point. You know, and speaking of releases, I'm glad to have you on to talk about this. Gutenberg is slated for WordPress 5.0, and it seems like that's set in stone. Nothing's going to change that. And there's been some arguments or some discussions that this has held up a lot of other things in WordPress. And we just recently had a WordPress 4.9.6, which introduced a lot of privacy-related features, some UI, the ability for users to export and request their data, and the ways to delete that data. And there were some changes in there. I mean, it was billed as a point release, but I think very easily it could have been a major release, but it can't be a major release because the next version was 5.0, but that's related for Gutenberg. And we run into this bit of an issue here. And then because of some some certain things that happened with 496. One of the features, I think, is related to documentation or what have you. Some of the auto updates were turned off for a release that everybody has been trained to know that this auto updates for point releases happened, but for at least a week, they didn't happen. So, you know, what happened there? What can you explain the whole WordPress 4.96 release and what happened with auto updates?
So, like, I've for a long time, I've been an advocate that we should be that all WordPress releases should be auto updates. Like major releases, minor releases, like it should be like you don't know what version of Chrome you're running. You don't really need to know what version of WordPress you're running. It should just keep itself up to date. Like there is, I'm not saying just like Gutenberg, there is a lot of work to be done before that could happen. So that's not a thing that's just suddenly going to drop. But I think that that's a really good way forward. And looking at, I think 4.9.6 was an interesting experiment in that, in adding some smaller features to core in an auto updated release. So when 4.9.6 was released, auto updates weren't turned on immediately. They were left off for a few hours just to see if there was anything critical. And there were a couple of reports of sites breaking on when it was released. As it turns out, it was a super rare case, but when people's sites break, then they're going to speak up. So the couple of sites that it did happen to, they immediately contacted us. So that's why it was left off, and like it spent some time on making sure that the plugins that were having compatibility issues were all fixed, and then auto updates were turned on. And there, it was a really smooth process. It went like any other auto update release after that.
So I think that's interesting to know that the dev team has the ability to monitor point releases as they go out and auto updates. And if it determines that, you know, there's some reports that immediately come in that sites break, you guys have the option or the ability to just, you know, turn the fire hose off, you know, disable automatic updates for now, try and get things fixed, and then turn them back on when you guys feel confident enough that the issue has been fixed.
Yeah, it's auto updates can be turned on and off. They can be rate limited. We can send them out to 5% of sites rather than all of them. It's not something that we have to say, well, it's released, everyone has this now. It's something that can effectively be ramped up. It's something that we can say, okay, here's the like the release is there. We can wait for people to manually update. We can turn it on for a small number of people. We can slowly ramp that up to everyone. And at the same time, it doesn't really affect the original purpose of auto updates was to be able to push out these security releases. We can very quickly transition to being able to push out a security release on top of that as well.
So John, is there any? Have you checked Vegas? I mean, how many 4.9 point somethings are we going to get before we get to Gutenberg?
As many as it takes.
That's a great answer.
You know, I don't know. Adding a major release to the auto update, it's just an array. Just put the release number in there and commit to WordPress.org, and now you're pushing for majors. Now it's like when it's time, it will be it'll be time. But I think creeping there is the right move. And plugging, I mean, getting it that way, for getting plugins to a point where we can reliably do that. I think getting, like I've said this before, I think getting the collective code quality of things to a point where we can somewhat reliably automate and expect to have passing results across the things that are active on a site, be able to accurately predict that an update won't take something down, and then be able to dry run that update, make sure that everything went okay, and then be able to switch it all over. If each and every one of those things is like a stepping stone to getting this to 100%. And all of those things, I think, just take a massive amount of time and testing and engineering to kind of deploy autonomously like that.
Yeah, this is not something that we'd be going into and just, well, flip the switch, everyone right. gets major auto updates. And we can't actually do that anyway. Like, to make it completely clear to everyone listening, it's like, it is not possible for us to push out WordPress 5.0 as an auto update to 4.9. Unless you've specifically like installed a plugin that opts you into major release auto updates, then we can't push 5.0 out to your site. Like, that's, so it would have to be a thing in a new major release to say, okay, now 5.0 or now auto updates are enabled for major versions.
And I just wonder, you know, from your perspective, do you think Gutenberg and being tied to 5.0, has it blocked any other sorts of development? I mean, I know we've had a collection of volunteers step up and really push for and get some GDPR privacy compliant tools into WordPress before 5.0, but is Gutenberg really holding up other parts of WordPress just for the sake of, well, this is Gutenberg and it's got to get done?
I think it's it's certainly a focus. Like, there are a lot of people focused on working on Gutenberg, and like, speaking of myself, who like, I work all over WordPress core, and but at the moment I am almost entirely focused on Gutenberg. So yes, there is some case of that where people who might otherwise be working on a wider variety of things are mostly focused on Gutenberg, but I don't think that Gutenberg is really preventing major work being done on core.
Yeah, just like any other project, delegation of priorities, right? And Gutenberg is a priority right now for release. I don't see what the big deal Absolutely. Is there. So WordPress, we just recently celebrated the 15th birthday of WordPress 0.70 being released, and John and I sort of talked about our time with WordPress and how it relates to our lives and where we think it's going. And I just wanted to get your take as a core developer in WordPress, and you've been around for a while. Just briefly tell us about your experience with WordPress and where do you think it's going?
Wow.
And wherever like, it's going, are you coming along for the ride?
I mean,
or being dragged. Just by your ankles, just okay.
I mean, it's kind of come a long way in these in the last 15 years. It's kind of come from this what was a fairly simple blogging platform to being this fully featured content management system, to being like this app platform where you can write apps on top of WordPress and like through the REST API. Then you never need to show that there's that WordPress is behind it. I think Gutenberg and like the whole block concept is a great it's a time of renewal in WordPress, really, where we're looking at a time where we're building the things that are going to be the base for the next 15 years.
And what better base to have than blocks?
Exactly.
I mean, why not?
Got to be able to build it all. But like Gutenberg is fundamentally like it's a change to WordPress as important as adding the plugin API was, adding actions and filters.
Mm-hmm. And actions and filters are the thing that made WordPress like super flexible and popular in the very beginning. The plugin system is. Without it, it would have been just one thing. I think same with the REST API. It does the exact same thing. REST API is there to let you use it for whatever it is that you need it for. I agree.
Yeah. And so the other part is that, I mean, obviously Gutenberg is, it's heavy on JavaScript. It's bringing modern development practices to WordPress. But on top of that, I think in a lot of ways we're taking those practices that are, some of them are a bit clunky, like having to compile your code, having to know what Webpack is or Babel, or dealing with NPM. As these aren't fun. Like there are a handful of people, I will admit to being one of them, who find them interesting, and I do not expect anyone else to care about these things. So I think what we're able to do is take those modern practices, but combine them with like the WordPress philosophy of making things really simple and decisions, not options, effectively. Like these compilers are, and configuring them are, they're just masses of options. So let's make those decisions so that people are able to just create the cool stuff, and they don't really need to care about what's going on behind the scenes.
So speaking of going back a little bit to Gutenberg, John and I have discussed this on the show, but Gutenberg, in some ways, you know, we were talking about the problem now of, you know, WordPress themes, some of them have a bazillion different options and support a billion different plugins. And we're already starting to see a couple of theme companies experiment where they create a Gutenberg theme that looks really good with this one plugin that has maybe 5 or 10 blocks in it. What if we start getting to the point where, you know, we have a WordPress theme and they say, install this plugin to have access to 300 different blocks? How does, at this stage, and I know there's been some changes to the block inserter, now there's child blocks, but what's the UI look like for 300 different blocks that plugin?
It's going to happen. Like there will be. There are already block library plugins available. So, and the selling point is 17 blocks, 30 blocks.
Yeah.
And
eventually that number's going to keep going up.
300 blocks. So I think that, yeah, the block inserter interface, it needs to be able to manage that. That's an extreme case. For the majority of people,
right,
they won't necessarily need that many, but certainly I can see many sites needing to have 50 or 60 blocks for the different ways that they use it.
So I wonder if we'll get to a future. Will Avada theme have more options or blocks? Yeah, that's what I want to know.
It's all about the blocks, baby. That's and we're going to see that more, like thinking of Gutenberg as Gutenberg's not just the block editor. Gutenberg is it's the whole project of bringing blocks to WordPress. So like the next phase where we're looking at Gutenberg customization or Gutenberg theming. And where we look at where the content is just a block and it's sitting around, it's got a bunch of blocks around it to create the entire site.
If history is, yeah.
I think that that's going to be super interesting for what the next generation of themes are going to look like. Mm-hmm.
Yep, I agree. If history is sort of doomed to repeat itself, we will be fortunate enough to have entire like font banks of blocks. Our blocks are just a piece of a font of which there will be 100 different variations on blocks that will be available through the Triple J Block Font Company LLC, right? Like that will just be the thing that you happen to have really nailed the Georgia of WordPress block fonts. And if you're lucky, then people love it and license it and it lives forever without you. Like this will just be the direction that things will inevitably have to go.
Yeah, like if you kind of think about it in terms of a lot of what Gutenberg does you imagine the sites that people are creating these days with plugins like advanced custom fields or that kind of thing. They're creating super complex interfaces for building like sites that have a huge amount of data on them. And with Gutenberg, the idea is that those interfaces can become a lot simpler. Like it can be a lot easier to build those sites, and a lot easier for the site owners to actually enter the data and create their pages, whatever it happens to be. And so, what is the next generation of advanced usage? What does advanced in Gutenberg look like? If what's currently advanced is simpler in Gutenberg, what's the next level of advanced? And I think that's going to be quite interesting.
Well, it's going to be the same as a font, I think. As my prediction will be that you'll end up with some folks that will make pretty classic looking blocks that just have their little signature on it, or they use very specific types of padding or CSS to make a block look, you know, precisely the way they want it to. And then just like there was 150 years ago, there will be blocks that are just flourish, that just add borders and add spacing and things to it. I mean, like the stuff that is in WooCommerce, that example of like the dynamic, I think we talked about it a few weeks ago, like columns and adding images and pricing and adjusting everything like live in the block is pretty slick. Like we're going to see some pretty tricked out stuff, and then we'll hopefully see some more super simple and refined ones.
I would really like to see an extension that changes blocks to no longer have four sides. I want to see blocks with five or seven sides and the layout engine for that.
Yep. But I mean, so that was, I've joked before, but like if you've ever used Apple Keynote like on iCloud, like on the website, it is a surprisingly good visual editor for just like making slides and stuff. I was like, this is really impressive. Like vector-based shaping and drawing stuff, and it all ports in from Keynote. You put it on an iPad and it shows up on the web, and you can edit it on the web the exact same way. It's an amazing thing. But yeah, octagons, whatever you want. I agree. Someone's going to do that. That's like, do you remember Winamp? Like, was like the first app that wasn't a rectangle that I had ever, like spheres and circles and crazy shapes.
Winamp skins. Players. Those were the days.
Yeah. We're going to have block skins for.
I see the next version of macOS is actually going to import Winamp skins, isn't it?
Finally. Yes. I've got my goofy Winamp skin dark mode turned on right now, actually. I'm right with it. It broke everything else, but dark mode's okay.
So one of the issues we talked about today, WordPress themes today, you could build in custom styles, custom CSS for like Gravity Forms output or Contact Form 7 form. And you can create these different styles and support various plugins in your theme. What's the current state? Maybe it's premature to ask this, but I mean, what's the current state of theme authors? I mean, will they have to build in custom styles and support for an untold number of blocks? I mean, it seems like kind of the same problem now, but instead of doing it for plugins, we're doing it for blocks.
No. Like, yeah, themes won't have to add in a specific style for every single block. Like, to some extent, a block should provide its own styling. Certainly themes can style it when they want to customize it, the same way themes provide customizations for WooCommerce's default styling. I would expect more advanced themes to be doing what they do now with the classic editor, is to provide editor styling to make the editor look as close as possible to what the front end output is going to look like.
And sort of related to this, Gutenberg plugin 3.0.0, which has just been released, they have actually made the decision to allow themes to opt into the default style system for Gutenberg blocks. So there's a little add theme support code you can add in for WP block styles, and It says that this will allow them to keep or reintroduce some more opinionated styles for elements like quotes, table, separator, pretty much the default blocks that come with Gutenberg.
Yeah, and I think that that's going to be really helpful for a theme authors, that they don't need to, like, if they want to just use the default styles, then go for it. If they want to tweak those styles, then they can do that too.
So we're nearing the end of the hour here. I wanted to, I'll give Gary the last word. Is there anything you'd kind of want to share with us, any information or maybe any call outs, any requests?
Actually, so there's a really cool post that that just went up. A guy by the name of Matt Brown, he's a developer at Vimeo, has done some static analysis on the WordPress code base, which is cool. Which is super cool if you're a developer, and not at all interesting if you're not.
Okay.
But Vimeo had this, like, they had a legacy code base, which was like 11 years old or something, that that they wanted to update. And so they built a tool that works for old PHP, which, as it turns out, WordPress has 15-year-old PHP. They've run this tool on it and found that, hey, there are a bunch of small changes that we could make to improve the quality and reliability of WordPress. So the ultimate outcome is WordPress becomes better and we have automated tools to do it. But it's an interesting post. The tool is called Psalm. It's a really interesting tool as well. I think that's pretty cool.
You have to give me a link to that on Twitter or whatnot. You know, if we're doing picks of the week, Gary just had it. You know, I don't even have to ask Gary for a pick of the week when he comes on. He just has one.
Gary's just going to come on every week to do the pick of the week and then leave.
And by the way, we haven't even gotten to the point yet to announce that Gary Pendergast is now officially a friend of the show. So welcome, Gary.
I'm honored.
We are honored to have you as a friend of the show, which also puts you in line, the pivotal line of succession. So if something happens to John, right, you may be called upon as a friend of the show to take over the spot.
Yeah, just as a warning.
Just a heads up.
I'm not allowed to leave unless somebody's ready to take my place. So, thank you, Gary. Welcome to your new weekly podcast. I'm going to put
it together. Yes. Nice, sweet. So other than that, anything else? Will you be at WordCamp EU?
I will. I will be at WordCamp EU. There's a there's a Gutenberg session that I'll be it's like 3 hours of chatting to the Gutenberg team, and we'll be going through building blocks and building plugins and all sorts of magical stuff. So that'll be interesting. And just generally, I'm around, so at Contributor Day, I am more than happy to have a chat about Gutenberg things. If you see my magnificent beard around, then pull me up and we can have a chat.
And one last question before I let you get out of here. Put you on the hot seat one last time. We know that WordCamp US is at the end of this year in Nashville, Tennessee. In fact, tickets, I believe, just were released, went on sale today, $40 each. Awesome value. And the schedule for WordPress 5.0 to be released with Gutenberg is 2018. Hopefully before WordCamp US, that'd be really cool. I mean, based on what you've seen so far, and now that Gutenberg is really, we're starting to see these mile-long list of change logs, which really are just iterations now. We're getting to the point where there's a lot of iterating going on what already exists in Gutenberg. Do you think we're still on par or on target to see Gutenberg or WordPress 5.0 by the end of 2018?
Yeah, I think where you're going to be taking your – definitely going to be taking your Christmas selfies and posting them in Gutenberg.
Sweet. In the selfie block.
Yep, in the selfie block. I like it. Let's build that now.
Oh,
WordPress 5.0 Sinatra is just taking his time. Just wait to the end of the year.
That's right.
Yeah, baby.
But boy, you know what a bit of exciting WordCamp US that would be if Gutenberg and 5.0 were released beforehand, whether that's a month or two, it doesn't matter, just beforehand. And everybody could just get together and talk about it, talk about their experience, and maybe showcase it off. I'd love to see the State of the Word really highlighting the progress of what a year or two has made, just sort of an overview of the development of Gutenberg and Matt's State of the Word. I hope that's something we can look forward to this year, maybe.
I'm just looking forward to seeing Gary in a tuxedo again.
Oh, yeah.
I'll get dressed up. I mean, Matt's always said that he wanted to release a version of WordPress live on stage. So maybe we'll do 5.0 live on stage.
Well, he has done that once, and then he vowed to never do it again.
If he's gonna we can always change that.
If he's going to top the Apple keynote on Monday, he's going to have to do it on an elliptical or like on a bicycle. Because that was amazing. The live demo while riding a stationary bike was incredible. So we need to see Matt. He needs to jump out of the boot. He needs to jump onto a treadmill and then release 5.0.
I'll see what I can do. I'll see if I can I can word him up.
So Gary, I want to thank you very much for spending an hour with us to give us an update on Gutenberg and other things going on in WordPress. How could people get in touch with you and maybe get involved in the Gutenberg project?
Let's see. I am at Gary Pendergast on Twitter. My website is pento.net. My photo blog is pento.blog. You'll notice a theme. And if you want to get involved in Gutenberg, then come and hang out on the Gutenberg repo is github.com/WordPress/Gutenberg or in the core editor channel on Slack.
All right, man. Thank you very much for coming on the show and all the best to you. Enjoy the rest
Thank
of your,
you very much.
I don't know, what would you say, day? I guess good day, sir.
Day. It's just starting.
Can I say good day to you?
You can. You can. You cannot say that. No.
Good evening, gentlemen.
Okay.
See you, Gary. You're welcome to stick around if you want to. We're just finish up. But otherwise, yeah, thanks for hanging out.
So, no problem. So we do have some other bit of news to get to. In fact, this one may touch close to home for John. I don't know. But the Simple Press forum plugin is up for adoption. Now, this is a forum plugin that's been around for WordPress for about a dozen years. In fact, I remember back in the day when I was looking for a community, something that would tie into WordPress, I actually came across this plugin, but I think I stopped using it because it was difficult to style and maybe it didn't have the feature set that I was looking for. I mean, how I ended up with vBulletin, so you know, right. Who knows what I was thinking. But developers Andy Staines and Steve Clayson have announced their plans, actually, to shut down operations last August on their customer support forum. But since then, they've had very little luck finding a suitable replacement. According to the developers, they simply just want to retire, and they're going to retire on August 1st of this year.
Hmm.
And they say that everything related to the site, which includes domain, the plugin code, customer information, and income, will transfer to the new owner with no strings attached. And Clayson says that the forum plugin's been a labor of love for a long time. They don't really want to see the plugin die because they have decided to retire. It's provided a good secondary source of income for many years and has good potential for anyone who wishes to make a go at it. So now one thing to keep in mind is Simple Press is not available on the WordPress Editor plugin directory. So they've made this thing for WordPress that kind of lives in its own bubble, and it mostly generates revenue through memberships, themes, and plugins. So if you're interested in taking over the plugin and essentially the business, you can visit the Simple Press forum website, visit the contact form, and send them an inquiry to learn more information about taking over the business from them. So I thought maybe you'd find a little bit of interest in that, John, a forums person.
Yes, I am. You know me. I love forums, but it's sad to hear that that's where they're at or what they're thinking. Because
more than a dozen years of those two working on this plugin for WordPress.
And forums are tough. We've talked about it on the show before, where there are a lot of it's a lot of overhead. It's a big investment to make in your site and community, and so fewer and fewer folks are choosing to do it. We're turning off comments on our websites instead of opening up forums. And so to see another piece of forum software start to Sunset itself or think about it. I hope somebody picks it up because there should be more options. It's important that there are good options for
now
one like of the forums and shopping carts, because that's how everybody learns from one another.
I mean, one of the best things it's got going for itself is that since it's built into WordPress, there's no bridge. You don't have to use a bridge component like for vBulletin. If you wanted to bridge right. the user database, you got to use a bridge. And I got burned by that
a couple of years back
when the person who created a bridge or a version that would merge into WordPress, you have to keep both pieces of software updated and in sync with each other. And if that developer decides that, hey, I no longer want to do this anymore, you're screwed. And that's right. I was on the wrong end of that deal a number of years ago. And I always told myself, that's it. I'm never using Bridge again to bridge software. I'm going to use some sort of integration or something that's built in. Well, or just not worry about bridging.
The integration that used to be necessary, even with old BBPress back in the day, was there was something really scary, but also still very elegant about it. Like, BBPress, they tried to use the XML RPC API, which 10 years ago was still actively kind of developed. And there was being able to run them side by side because vBulletin was PHP. And so you run them on the same server, even if you wanted to. And then you're just running it directly. You sort of deeply integrated these things and you've wrapped your WordPress around a vBulletin shell and vBulletin around a WordPress shell. You kind of have everything in the middle. And that was the days where that was kind of the way that you did these things with like CMSs, like PHP Nuke or Cake PHP, all those old big portal style wrapper libraries. So long story short, this is sad. I hope somebody picks it up, especially if there's if they're earning revenue from this. It's if they're just they're kind of done with it, then it's a gift for someone else to take it over. So hopefully,
I should note that in the email they sent me, and I can't read the actual post on their customer support forums because I'm not a paying customer. But they've based on what I can see, it's just no strings attached. If they like you or your team and they feel that you're a good fit for taking it over, they'll just hand it over to you. There's no acquisition, no cost involved. So. You know, it sounds like a great opportunity for somebody or some team out there.
Yep.
Hopefully. So the WordCamps for iOS app that we briefly talked about, which we had some concerns about it violating the WordCamp trademark. Well, Marcel Schmitz, the main developer of the app, has changed its name to WP Camps. He's also added more events to the app. So if you download it, in fact, I think he recently had a new update. He's changed the icon, so now the icon's different based on user feedback he received. But I was checking it out, and I was looking at information for WordCamp Kent, Ohio, which I believe is this weekend. And you can see speakers and other things in there. I think WordCamp EU has also been added to the events in the app. And he's squashed a few bugs. And he says that this version sets the stage for search, chat, a who's on stage feature, and more. Now, if you are organizing the WordPress events, whether that's a WordCamp or a meetup or something else, you can get in touch with Schmitz on Twitter. You can follow him. Or within the app on the iOS device, if you go to the About screen, if you click on the About section, there's an email form that pops up, and you can email him and just tell him some information about your WordPress event, and he'll try to get it added to the app. But I'm glad to see that he's changed the name so that completely avoids the WordCamp trademark issue. Mm-hmm. It's a great app. I like browsing through it. Things are right there. It looks beautiful, and I hope that he continues to work on this. I can't wait to see some of the features he has planned, see how they look when they get implemented into the app. And it's for free, by the way, on the Apple App Store.
Yep. I mean, this is such a great move to do. One, they've done a great job. He's done an outstanding job on making this app look and feel and be a native app. It looks like an updated version of iOS 11, the way that everything looks and feels. But just mapped to the central.wordcamp.org API. It's kind of a great way, one, to sort of give something back to the community, but then also it's the best way to build a brand or a business or awareness around what it is that like they do. Like what his career is building apps and using WordPress to do it. So what better way to sort of do all of the things, then to take the initiative, use your abilities to make something great for other people, and then try and, you know, fit in within all the rules and licensing and do all the right things. So it's great. Outstanding work. Looks really good.
And sustainability has been a hot topic I've seen come up lately, especially on the web and the internet, using green servers, infrastructure, data centers, what have you. Jack Lennox, who's a software engineer at Automattic, he's launched a new site called Susty WordPress, or Sustainability Plus WordPress, that focuses on web sustainability using WordPress. And what he's done is he uses underscores, but he removed all the parts of underscores he didn't need, uses one SVE image, no sidebars, pretty much the bare minimum he can, and he got a WordPress website that only transfers 7 kilobytes of data. And as you might expect, it crushes performance benchmarking tools. And you can, we'll have a link to this in the show notes to figure out how he built this blog. And he's going to be talking about how to be sustainable on the web and how to lessen your footprint and things of that nature. But John, how about electricity these days and robots and you know, all that good stuff?
You say, you know, my tweets were not necessarily directly about this. They weren't.
No, they weren't. Okay. I'm just asking.
So I think it's important.
By the way, at the end of this, I asked a question. I don't know if some people may have gotten me by this. I think it was just something of wonder. You know, transferring 7 kilobytes of data, that's a wonderful thing. That means it's instantaneous. It's fast. Yes. But, you know, how practical is this for large and complex sites? And I think the answer is it's not. You have to do what you got to do to make these feature rich sites that people depend on. And a lot of time, you're not going to do it with transferring 7 kilobytes of data. It's not how it works. I mean, right. JavaScript libraries are larger than that.
Right. I agree. And that's where I think the message that he is delivering is really important to convey. It needs to be said because it is the exact opposite of kind of the direction that we all see things going, which is really enormous, bloated websites that
the average size of a website keeps going up and not down despite internet speeds going up.
That's exactly right.
And like, so we're talking about megabytes in size now for web pages.
Yeah. Yep. And it's, there are some that are egregiously bad. But my analogy on Twitter was, there's a bunch of them, but you know, cars used to be, cars didn't have rear view mirrors on them. They didn't have roofs. They didn't have anything. But eventually you want everything from a roof on your car to mirrors to look behind you to seatbelts to make sure that when you crash that you don't go flying out of it or that you don't hurt yourself, whatever else. You want radios, you want speakers, you want 2,000 pounds worth of lithium ion batteries because you don't want a gasoline powered engine anymore. They just keep getting heavier. They're not going to get lighter. And if you do need something lighter, then you're kind of in the smaller group of people who actually need a Mazda Miata because that's all that you care about. That's what you enjoy. And that's what you're choosing to do. And so I think there is something very natural or humanly natural about bigger and better. You want the bigger, better thing. You have to choose to eat less. You have to choose to watch what you eat. You have to choose to live in a smaller home. You have to choose.
No. No.
Yes. Yes. No. Yes, you do. Sorry. You have to.
No, that's my choice. No to all those things.
Well, you don't have to choose, but in general, it's a choice you have to make. And it's not the right choice for everybody. And it's not all the time either. And so in order for the web to get better, in order for code to get better, or in order for our experiences to get fancier, it needs more. It will not have less. You have to choose to have less. And so it's important that someone's delivering this message because it is an option. It is reminding people to not be gluttonous with the code that they're writing or the apps that they're building. It's a reminder to keep things simple and slim, and to remember the value in the efficiency of it all instead of just building everything into some big monolithic thing and patting yourself on the back and thinking it's good. There is another side of this where, as I think he mentioned, you know, Bitcoin and the internet and the power that's consumed with all these things. And that's a big deal too. I mean, that's really the biggest deal out of all of this is just how costly it is for these things to stay running. And to be fair, the internet isn't alone in this. It just so happens that none of us pay like internet tax. And like the roads are not cheap. Your infrastructure, your gas, your water, your sewer is not cheap. Yeah. But you pay taxes. Can you imagine for those
paying
things.
a carbon tax on your ISP bill?
Eventually.
I mean, it's not a possibility.
It's really, truly not. They'll look at the terabytes or petaflops of data that you use in a month from watching Netflix.
Oh, man.
They're going to say you've generated this much in usage, and you'll just be taxed.
Guess what? I'll take action then if I gotta start paying for it.
And so this is exactly how generations before us felt with toll booths, with roads. Most of America was paved less than 50 years ago, and so the fact that we don't have the money to support all of that ailing infrastructure is because we don't feel like we should have to. No different than anybody feels like they should be paying for the mistakes of everyone before them, but here we are stuck doing it. So it will happen eventually. They just need to figure out how. And with promises of it being better, we've given all of the big telecom companies billions of dollars in tax revenue and dollars to bring fiber optic internet to all of the United States. And where is that? It never came.
Well, I tell you what, man. If it got out and ISPs started doing what you just described, I think no quicker way would you have an influx of activity of shrinking websites and getting them to be performant based on the outrage of the consumers, the viewers.
So, I mean, kind of, but let's look at the automotive industry. Cars that have gotten heavier still, you know, get their 35 miles a gallon, but there was no real, I mean, everyone knew since the 90s that more efficient, higher mileage automobiles, more, carbon monoxide testing or, you know, tailpipe testing, kind of stuff. And that took 20 years. Everything stayed as ugly and terrible as it was. Some companies, most of them, or at least some like Volkswagen, get busted manipulating the system. Everyone's scrambling to try and just barely stay afloat. Companies like automakers like GM, Dodge can't make it. But they're at this point, they're too big. If a company like Mozilla couldn't afford to pay their internet tax, eventually someone's going to bail them out. We're going to watch a lot of this history repeat itself and rant, I guess.
This is going to be a great discussion. Now we have, I'm planning on having Jack on next Wednesday. I believe he'll be live from the UK. So that'd be pretty cool if we get him on the show. Mm-hmm. Cause I would like to just have a general conversation about sustainability in the web in general, because it's a hot topic. And mm-hmm. there's a, you know, like you mentioned, Bitcoin, electricity, mm-hmm. that uses so much electricity and power. Bitcoin mining, it's unbelievable.
The thing of Bitcoin mining is interesting because it's always been open, and everyone has been open with how much energy that it costs to use it and all of it. It's never been a secret. The revenue that has been generated is there's no comparison between the energy that it has cost and on and on and on. It's just that that's what the machines are supposed to do. The machines are there. The servers are there. The computers exist to do all of that heavy lifting and work so that we don't, so that horses don't, so that creatures don't. We build these things so that the computer can do the work. The fact that the work costs energy is not a surprise. Everything costs energy. But there is also an argument to be said that if we're doing everything smart, which we're doing nothing smart, that if we were doing this right, that the energy that we were spending would be at least have a byproduct of energy that's worth using. And it's just the process right now is too complex. It's hard to see where the Bitcoin mining starts and where the mining for coal ends, and whether or not that industry is supported by the other industry in order to make any of this work even remotely sustainably. We just don't, it's just too complex.
No, I wonder,
I'm not going to feel bad that my website is a megabyte big, because
I wonder,
one, it's going to be, and two, the machine had to do all the work anyways. So
I wonder how much our friendship cost in carbon credits.
It's priceless. Priceless, Jeff.
Thank you very much.
Our friendship's priceless.
And with that, that's going to do it for this episode of WordPress Weekly. You can find show notes for this episode and every other episode on WPTavern.com. You can follow me on Twitter at Jeffro, JeffR0. And John, where can we follow your rants on Twitter?
At JJJ and JJJ.blog. I hope my, you know, I wasn't not trying to be negative.
No.
Yes, it's not what it's about. But
yeah, it's not. Don't worry about it. But hopefully we have Jack on the show next week. I think it'll be a great conversation to have about sustainability on the web and just in websites in general, and maybe what everybody can do to do their small part. I mean, it really comes down to optimization for code, for images, and whatever else. So we'll talk to you again next Wednesday afternoon. Say bye, John.
Bye, John. Bye, everyone.